I'd like to discuss tonight the beginning of second parak Avos, the first mishnah of the second parak, Rabbi Omer, Ezu hiderech yishara sheyivalo ha'adam. What is the proper path, the straight path that a person should choose? Kol shehi toferes la'osel v'toferes lo min ha'adam. So it has to be something which the Ribbono Shel Olam is pleased with, and people think it is proper and praiseworthy. Person should be careful with apparently light mitzvahs, like serious mitzvahs, because you don't know what is the reward of mitzvahs. And you should always calculate the loss you may incur to perform mitzvah against the reward, and whatever reward you anticipate from an avera against the loss. Rabbi Yoina, in explaining the Mishnah, begins at telling us that the path a person searches for that gives glory to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the performance of mitzvahs. When a person does mitzvahs, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mefo'ar behem, and the teferis of a mitzvah is the teferis amitis b'vnei adam. This is the only true glory. And therefore, you should choose that path for yourself. Rabbi Yonah is saying there are many things people believe will bring about praise and glory, popularity, and ultimately, the only true path to that is mitzvahs. And teferes lo min ha'adam, sheyaseh ha-mitzvah bizmanam, that you do the mitzvahs in their time. And it's based on the pasuk Yemishlei Devar Be'itam Atov, because you may do the mitzvahs at a time that people don't think is a good time to do it, and there won't be pe'er, and that's not a mitzvah b'shlemus. So the mitzvah should be done the proper way, in the proper time, and he adds, it should be done in a nice way. The idea of hider mitzvah, lulavna, talisna, sefer torahna. So what is the derech yishara sheyivalo ha'adam? The derech yeshara is the pursuit of mitzvahs, and the pursuit of mitzvahs in the best possible way, the best possible time, the best possible items in the performance of the mitzvahs. So, simply, what is the path a person should choose? The path that brings praise and glory, and that's the performance of mitzvahs. Then, the Rabbeinu Yoina quotes the Rambam's comments on this Mishnah, and says it has to do with a person's character traits, person's midos. And the derech yishara isn't so much talking about mitzvahs versus not mitzvahs, but rather the mahal chachayim, how a person should conduct himself. And it has to be teferes lo'osel, teferes lo min ha'adam. So the Rambam writes that by perfecting your midas al derech ha'emtza us, the middle of the road, that's the derech ha'muvcher, that's the select way, that brings teferes HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it gives him a leif tahor, it's mechash b'kir baruch nechona, teferes lo min ha'adam, and he'll conduct with people min ha'yafa, nedivus, he'll be generous, and he, in all his characteristics and all his traits, he will do everything with measure properly. The Rambam in Yana Chazaka writes at great length this idea of being middle of the road, not to be an extremist. A person should do everything on balance. And the Rambam says there's no mida tachas hashemayim that's better than derech emsaus. A person should be middle of the road. So I don't know if you've ever heard, there's a well-known explanation from a Gifter Olva Shalom about this concept of being middle of the road. There are people who call themselves centrists. They call themselves centrists because they are followers of the Rambam. The Rambam says the way to go is middle of the road. Now the centrists are a pretty modern group, and they basically place themselves between yeshiva, Torah, orthodoxy, and irreligious. So if you're right in the middle, you take a little of each, and you're not going to be irreligious, you're not going to be so Torah yeshivish, you're just going to be right in the middle. It's certainly like they feel this is a, really a modern orthodox approach, and they're saying we are the correct approach because this is centrist. We are the Derech HaMavitza. So Gifter Olav Shalom said, it's true. A person is supposed to be a centrist, but what are your poles? Center from what? The Rambam wasn't saying be center from irreligious to ultra-Orthodox zealot. That wasn't his poles that you should find your place in the middle. The concept of being in the center is in the center within the religious world. We're not looking at people who have given up on Torah mitzvahs and saying, okay, I'll find myself somewhere in between them and the frumis. That's not the concept of being a centrist. The Rambam's center is center of the range of Torah Yahadus, and within that range, I'm looking for the Midas HaMamutza, where I'm generous, but I don't throw away my money, and all the Midos a person's supposed to have on balance, what we said before. This is not an allowance to give up on half the mitzvahs because, well, I'm halfway between zero mitzvahs and all the mitzvahs is half the mitzvahs. That's not the concept of the Rambam's Derech HaMamutza. Derech HaMamutza is, nothing should be extreme. Don't be extreme, but of course you're doing everything that you're supposed to be doing. That's true, but you can't pick the irreligious as one of your poles when you start to gauge your center. Well, again, it could apply to everything, ultimately. Your fervor and your everything that you do and will be in the middle of the road.
But it's not talking about being in the middle of the road, obviously, at the mitzvahs.
Right, except to all the mitzvahs.
I don't want to be in the middle of the road with hell.
But the Rambam says it's supposed to be in the middle of the road. You don't eat too much. You don't eat too much. You don't eat too little. You don't drink too much, you don't drink too little. You do everything on balance. Right? Not too much, not too little, on balance. Then the Rabbeinu Yonah goes on to explain that when the Mishnah says a person be careful with mitzvahs and be careful with the apparently light mitzvahs, like the more serious mitzvahs, because you don't know the schar of mitzvahs, he makes a very basic observation. The Torah does not hide from us punishments. We know which averus require kares. We know which averus have capital punishment. We know which are skila, which are sreifa, which are hag, which are chenek. We know which are just malchus. We know all these things. The Torah tells us all these things. The Torah does not tell us anywhere about schar. There are increments of punishment that the Torah doesn't withhold from us that information.
The punishment on how much is going
to be? It's hard to say. In other words, perhaps you could say if Chil Shabbos is Schila, Shmir Shabbos must be way up there, which would be true. But in the Arayos, right, there's a range of punishments for the Arayos. Some Arayos are Sreifa, some are Chenek, some are Malkus. If a person marries a person he's supposed to marry, it's hard to say what does that translate over into in schar. You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't always work like that. In any event, the Rabbeinu Yonah says, so why is it that the Torah doesn't hide from us punishments, and yet when it comes to schar, it's concealed? So he brings in Medrash Hilchos Yerushalmi, a mashal of a king who has a paradise, he has an orchard, and he doesn't tell them the schar of each type of tree. He wants the orchard to be full of all kinds of trees. If he would tell them, well, if you do this kind of tree, you get a lot of reward, and the other tree not, then no one will do the trees that don't, and he'll have an empty paradise. So therefore, he doesn't tell them, and therefore, the paradise is full, and they'll get their schar. And therefore, a person when it comes to mitzvahs won't ignore any mitzvahs, even if they are on the kal side. This is what it says, because if you knew the schar, you would ignore some mitzvahs. You just want to do them, because I'll just put all my effort on the big schar mitzvahs. Now, he goes on to say a different deher, and he says, in the Mishnah, it's saying a little bit different. You don't know the schar of mitzvahs, because like we just said, the Torah doesn't tell us the schar of the mitzvahs. is really driving home another point. We have no appreciation for how much schar we get for even the smallest mitzvah. Ain't I tell you, Dema Schar Mitzvah is not just simply a statement that we don't know what the schar is, but more saying we don't appreciate how great the schar is for apparently small mitzvahs. And he gives an example. The mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein, of descending away a bird, and Torah says, L'manit Avloch, Rachta Yomim. So you have this bracha of goodness and Arichas Yomim for just sending away a bird. You didn't do anything. So Kal V'Chaymer, mitzvahs that cost a lot of money and that are difficult to fulfill, how much more so? So on the one hand, we have the Mishnah beginning by telling us that when a person chooses a path, he should choose a path that brings glory to Hashem and to himself, and simply that means in the performance of mitzvahs, and the Ram would say in the way he conducts himself with people. And then the Mishnah says, be careful with mitzvah kala k'mitzvah chamura, don't treat mitzvahs lightly, because in ato yodea manzachon shal mitzvahs, you don't realize the schar. So if the whole Mishnah is referring to mitzvahs, it flows a little better. What is the derech yishar shiv la'adam? The derech of mitzvahs, that's the true pe'er to Hashem, it's pe'er to you, and all mitzvahs are that way. Now, we know that there are 248 mitzvahs that say, counted in the Tayag mitzvahs. There are 613 mitzvahs, 248 mitzvahs that say, and 365 for the leisase. And the 248 mitzvahs that say correspond to 248 Evarim that Chazal enumerates, that the human body has 248 Evarim. We don't use the word Aver perhaps the way we would use, we say limbs, it doesn't includes organs, it's a loose term that defies the definitions we use in physiology. So every mitzvah corresponds to one of the 248 Evarim. And the performance of the mitzvahs gives koyach to that aver, both in the physical sense and in the spiritual sense. The Chafetz Chaim writes in his introduction to his commentaries to Hilchos Shabbos and Mishneh Berurah Chiyuvei Kimmel, he says that just like in the Evarim, there are some Evarim you can't live without, and some Evarim we can't live without. So too, when it comes to mitzvahs, there are some mitzvahs that a person will neglect, and he still will survive, and he won't get kares, but there's some mitzvahs that if you don't have these mitzvahs, then it's suicidal, so to speak, in a ruchnius level. So clearly, Shabbos is one of those mitzvahs that you can't live without. In the realm of Ramach Evarim, Shabbos is either the heart, or it's the head, or the brain. It's part of the body that you can't survive without it. Klai Yisrael cannot survive without Shabbos. And that's why the punishment for Chilul Shabbos is so severe. And the fulfillment of Shemir Shabbos gives koyach to these parts of your body that really need to exist, for the rest of us to exist. To say I'll be an Erlich Yid if I'm not keeping Shabbos, there's no such thing. You cannot be an Erlich Yid and not keep Shabbos. Everything else you do, it's like, you know, you make sure that your fingernails are nicely manicured and polished, but the person's heart is going out of them. You have to have a strong heart, you have to have strong lungs, you have to have a functioning brain and all that stuff, and then you could take care of everything else. So certainly Shabbos is one of the big Evarim, so to speak. Now, we don't know ultimately which mitzvah goes to which Aver. The same we don't know what is the schar for individual or particular mitzvahs. But ultimately, one thing is clear. We really don't appreciate the schar for mitzvahs. We don't grasp how great it is to do a mitzvah, any mitzvah. The Chazal teach us there is no schar for mitzvahs in this world. We don't get rewarded for doing mitzvahs in this world. The reason we don't get rewarded for doing mitzvahs in this world is because there is nothing in this world that can compensate you for a mitzvah. There's nothing. There's nothing big enough, great enough, fun enough, exciting enough, pleasurable enough to equal schar of a mitzvah. It's hard for us to grasp because we're dealing in a spiritual realm of what is spiritual hana and spiritual schar. But ultimately, we'd be shortchanged if we would get schar for the mitzvahs we do in this world. And the idea of recognizing or understanding that schar is so great is important, because sometimes we don't think it's a big deal when we do mitzvahs. Like, so if I do it, I don't do it, like, what's the difference? We don't realize what we're passing up when you pass up a mitzvah opportunity. When you have the opportunity to do a mitzvah, you know, it's like you just got an opportunity to receive $10 million. You just, I'm busy today, I'm a little tired, I'm not going to do that. I'd rather take a nap and read a book. Are you crazy? You're going to read a book and take a nap when he's offering you $10 million to drive to the airport? Like what? The Chafetz Chaim writes in Mishneh Berurah, in the beginning of Shulchan Aruch, that a person is not supposed to be embarrassed to do mitzvahs. Azus is not a good midah. We're not supposed to be brazen. We're not supposed to be impudent. We're not supposed to be chutzpahdik. But when it comes to doing mitzvahs, you have to allow yourself a certain degree of chutzpah. Because sometimes you might be uncomfortable, it might be embarrassing, no one else is doing it, and you're going to make a statement by doing what you have to do. You're going to do a mitzvah. So you have to have a certain degree of azus to do mitzvahs, ignoring the fact that no one else is doing it. So one example this one bring is, let's say it's the winter time, it's time for Shal Shudas, and you're with some people, and then no one's eating Shal Shudas. And you're shy, you're embarrassed to say, can I please have two challah rolls or two matzahs after wash the Shal Shudas time? And no one's eating, and you got to do it. Shal Shudas. It takes a little nerve, it takes a little chutzpah, if you will. So good. So you have to do that. So to take some chutzpah and go, I said, you know, I need a wash. Do you have two matzahs? Do you have two rolls? I can wash and have Shal Shudas. And they may say, nah, you know, you could take a cookie too. You'd be yitz with a cookie. You have an apple, have in mind, you don't have to wash. There are some shittas that you might be yitz by not washing, but the ikar halacha is to wash. So you wash. And like I said, it may be, it takes a certain degree of azus, but if we appreciated what it was to eat Shal Shudas, so then what kind of question is it? You know, we have a family joke based on a story of Chaz Nish, which I'm sure never happened, that when it came, someone visiting him on Amazir Shabbos, and Chaz Nish asked him, did he eat Lava Malka? And the fellow said, no, not yet, so good, so I'm washing Lava Malka, you know, wash. I said, I'm not going to wash from Lava Malka, I'll just have a piece of cake. And the way the story goes, which again, I don't think this ever happened, was the Chaz Nish said, I'm sure it was in Yiddish, he said, you'll be sorry. You'll be sorry later. You don't want to wash now. There'll come a time you'll be sorry you didn't wash the Shmuel Malka. We don't appreciate what it is, Tima Malka. We don't appreciate Shashu. We don't appreciate all these things. And sometimes we're in, like I said, in a position where you can't be shy. And you have to be assertive. And it's not your nature. And you don't want to do that. If there was $10 million that you had to pick up off the floor, you'd be embarrassed picking up $10 off the floor. You pick it up off the floor. What's the big deal? You don't care what people are going to say about you. Say what you want. Laugh at me all you want. I got $10 million. When you're doing mitzvahs, millions of dollars don't even describe what it is. So we should be embarrassed. We should be nervous. We should be shy. Sometimes you're not going to be shy.
If we don't get rewarded for mitzvahs, how can we be punished for averos in this world?
So us. True punishment is not in this world.
True, but I thought they said like,
for tzaddikim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, b'midas rachamav, will punish in this world. But that's the true punishment is not in this world. No question about it. True punishment is in the next world. And hopefully, we're tzaddikim, so Hashem has rachmanis in us and will give us in this world and be yitzah our punishment.
Would it be literal when we say that the Ebers can't tell itself?
Like,
if you're not doing mitzvah, the
Ebers
can be affected?
Right, the Ebers will atrophy.
Spiritually.
Literally on a spiritual level.
But not physically.
Not necessarily. Physically. Not necessarily, correct.
So any good that we have has no correlation to our actions
then? So this is a question. Peirosayim ba'olam hazeh. Do we get peiros of the mitzvahs? We may not get the schar for the mitzvah in this world, because nothing in this world can possibly compensate for the schar. But there's fringe benefits. And the fringe benefits are good. Like the Chumash says, you do the mitzvahs, it'll rain, you'll have bumper crops, your animals will flourish. That's not schar mitzvah in this world, because there's no schar mitzvah in this world. But if you do the mitzvahs, Hashem will give you what you need to continue to do mitzvahs. That's really how we look at it. Hashem will provide you what you need, so you'll always be able to do more mitzvahs. Yeah.
I remember hearing this question, but I don't remember what the answer we got was. But, I think it's on or something. But basically, why is it fair then that Roshan can have punishment then?
Yeah, it's a famous question. Why is it fair for a Rosha to get rewarded for their mitzvahs in this world if they're getting gypped? They're getting shortchanged. Rishoyim, tzaddikim get punished in this world for their averus, and Rishoyim get rewarded for their mitzvahs. But it's not fair. It's not fair because the Rosh is losing out.
Yeah.
If the schar for the mitzvah can't be measured in this world, why are we saying, well, I took care of the Rosh in this world? I gave him a brand new Cadillac, so now I don't have to give him schar. Cat doesn't match up to schar and mitzvah. You gypped him. So it's a well-known question. Chai Shul Levitz asked it in the Sichas Musar, and I also saw it recently somewhere else with a different answer. Chai Shul Levitz says that people have the ability to determine for themselves what they want for the schar. If they value Olam Hazeh, then the schar will be Olam Hazeh. If we value Olam Haba, our schar will be Olam Haba. The Rosh is very scary.
Well,
so he says the Rosh values Olam Hazeh, so he gets schar by Olam Hazeh. If we value Olam Haba, our schar is safe for Olam Haba. That's Chaim Shmuel Levitz's answer.
What's that?
To think about it. What's your question?
Why does the Chumash make it sound like that's a schar?
Again, this is a question. The Chumash says you do the mitzvahs, this will happen.
Yeah.
So that's the question. The Rambam himself also says it. The Rambam addresses it. Says, how could this be schar? There's no schar in this world. So the answer is, the Rabbanu Shalom makes it easy for you to continue to do mitzvahs. If you want to do mitzvahs, Shalom will allow you. So what do I need to do mitzvahs? I need to be healthy. I need panosah. I need these things. So Shalom will give you those things so you continue to do mitzvahs. Not that it's schar, but rather just helping you do more mitzvahs.
Isn't it good happens you have to be worried that it's your schar?
I don't know if you have to be worried if something good happens. I think you have to be worried if you had a close call. We've talked about this before. That if a person is in a situation where he's in a sakana and he is saved, he has to be afraid that he has used up or depleted zechusa.
No, he gains zechusa.
No.
Everyone else luckier, they
never almost. No. If someone was saved by a close, a near miss, you have to replenish zechusa. That's what the Mishnah says. Why do we give tzedakah? Start building up zechusa again. Person should work on making sure they didn't leave themselves there. That's Yaakov Avinu. Katan b'kol chasad b'kol ames. Yaakov Avinu was afraid he had no zechusim. Why? Because Hashem was good to him. He had so many trials and travails. He was afraid. He exhausted his Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu is afraid after the Melchama with the four kings, there's no schar left because he exhausted all schar. So Hashem says to him, don't be afraid. You didn't lose any zechusim. It's still there. There is this concept of when you're in a sakana that maybe your zechusim are being depleted. So we avoid that. Also, according to the Marsha and some others, if you daven for something that you're not supposed to have and you get it, you might be depleting zechusim to get it.
Well, we don't know. How do we know?
How do you
phrase it, right?
So, what we say, Moshe would daven for matan eschina. Says, Yibarash, but don't deserve it. I'm asking for a freebie. And Rashi says, what does Rashi say in Veschanan? That's the Derech HaTzadikim, HaTzadikim Daven. They don't daven asking for things that will deplete the schar. And that's the Gemara in Tainus, the stories of Rav Chanina Medoisa. We don't want to eat up our bank account in Shemayim.
So,
no, you get schar for your zechusim. No. Again, schar is the reward, zechus is the merit. You get reward for your merits.
Do we, if you dive in the Tefillah Shemayim Atzeret Torah, then does that mean that you don't want your zechus?
I think so.
Maybe someone has to be a merit. If you dive in for a husband, you might be using zechus.
Maybe. Or maybe they're going to end up marrying the wrong person.
So sometimes is it worth you that zechus?
So then you can never dive
in. But is it worth sometimes using that zechus?
Why would the person in the options get married? Everyone is born with a Pacific. I don't understand your question.
These some of us have children and they don't have kids, they have a bad child now.
That happens too sometimes. Anyways,
so how do you know
the bottom line, so we daven that it should all be the good.
I should Should
have a child for the good? That's the lashon we say. Everything should be for tov. We're not asking for anything that's not coming, that we're not supposed to
or
get.
You can ask for a few things and you say, but it's wrong for me for the good.
Or should you not ask for anything in particular?
A person is not a daf for things that they need, but they trust in a Kaddish Baruch that this is only going to
be.
If they can pull off,
they think they need it. Well, okay.
Let's say they can pull off, and I'm davening for them.
Right.
I, you don't want to give up my husband for them. I just want them.
Oh no, you don't give a daf for someone else.
Yeah, I doubt they're going to get better. They're not supposed to get better. Now I'm giving them my chusim for them.
The only issue with giving a chusim is when you start being mafish chala for somebody else. That's the question we're talking about. Mafish chala for somebody else. Because there, am I giving away the schar of my hafash chala? So many say that that's not what you're doing at all. You're davening at an eis ratzon, and the eis ratzon is when I'm mafish chala. I'm doing a mitzvah hafash chala. Now is a good time to mispal for somebody else. So I'm not giving away my schar. Hafash chala is a big schar. I'm not giving that away. That's for me.
Learning,
like,
right?
Dedicated
learning. It's all the same.
Right.
It's a
again, you don't give away schar mitzvah. Schar mitzvah
is giving away the schar.
What's wrong with giving away the schar mitzvah?
No.
You would be, instead of, you'd be reading a magazine and study that to the person. So you, instead of reading a magazine, you're giving it to
the person. No, that's not the issue. The issue is
why
it makes you better whether you get the schar or not.
I don't think people give it, really, would give away if they knew what it was.
Not for someone, isn't that for someone giving?
No,
you
exactly.
Should be there to the person.
No, you're being responsible to punish. You're begging Hashem.
Yeah, you're praying for someone to get better.
A child goes to his father and says, I need something, can you help me? We go to Ribono Shel Olam, Avinu, I need this. Tap in Himmel, please give this to me. Father in Heaven, I'm asking for a gift.
Why can you get a gift?
That's fine, that's what we're asking for. That's our tefillah.
Why
did
you say
that
you might use them
to I did not say that.
Isn't that this whole discussion?
I said you don't want to give us chusim, so when we die, we ask for freebies. You know, a person goes to the doctor's office, do you have any free samples? That's what we're doing. We go to the Ribono Shel Olam asking for free samples.
Yeah, I don't want to go Jewish.
After it comes to money,
it's the whole, it's the whole yisoid. We don't want to use chusim. We don't want to deplete our merits.
That's the whole, like, davening Mashonei, or even like,
Mashonei, no, Yekib, you die Machu
Shemayim.
There's Shevach, there's Hodor. Of course you tell not to.
That's
every morning you say not for the Nisayim.
I know, it's a chutzpah.
No, it's not.
Why?
We don't want Nisayim.
But it's like, I did so much bad. Please forgive me.
Right.
Don't do anything wrong to me.
Right.
Don't punish me.
Right. We do it all the time.
We don't say not to punishment. We say, yeah.
What? Do you go to a parent, a kid goes to a parent and says, please patch me because I was bad today in school?
You don't say, please do it. It says, you know, please not this and this.
Don't say,
I won't do it again. Please don't punish me.
Right, but it's different because a patch is the parent's teaching them a lesson, right?
So is Hashem.
Oh, no.
Every parent, yeah. Hashem isn't vindictive. Hashem isn't vengeful. All Einshim are guiding you to do what's right.
Okay, but that's different. But then in
but we don't want Onshim, and we don't want Nisyonas. We don't want any of these things. We'd rather not have be tested. It's very difficult to have Nisyon. We don't want Nisyonas. We come anyway. Some of us come, but we die not to have. And if we're going to have Nisyon, it's going to be a hard Nisyon. It's going to be an easy Nisyon, whatever it is. Let me tell you a story of Nisyon. I have my storybook here. I mean, it's Gavaldic safe. It's safer, but it's full of stories. The Mishnah says, we don't know Schar of Mitzvahs.
What makes
it
safer?
Torah. If it contains Torah, it's a safer.
Any bit of Torah?
If it's Torah, it's a safer. If it's a storybook with some Divrei Torah, it's different than Divrei Torah with some stories. The Mishnah says, you should calculate the hefset of a mitzvah keneged schar. So Chaim Avad Yosef brings a story that he had heard over about Rabbeinu Polito. I'm sure there are many similar stories. This fellow, Rabbeinu Polito, was the gabbai in Yeshivas Parat Yosef. He was a boy who learned in Yeshivas Parat Yosef. And there was a gabbai who came from Turkey. And when he lived in Turkey, this Rabbeinu Polito had a factory that manufactured clothing. And one day, an officer of the Turkish army comes to his manufacturing plant and says, I have to make sure there's clothing for the soldiers in the army. I need 10,000 uniforms. Can you produce them for me and you get paid for them? I mean, it's a good contract. We have government contracts and a business. It's very profitable. So he looks at the clock and says, you know, I have to go to Dav Mincha. Is it okay if we meet in a half hour? I'll be happy to do business with you, but I really got to go to shul. And I'll come back in a half hour and we'll discuss the details. The officer, the purchasing agent for the army said, I don't have a half hour right now or no deal. So Ben Aflito said, okay, no deal. And the fellow went to a competitor and made a deal with the competitor, who also had a fabric factory, and bought from him 10,000 uniforms, and Aben Aplita went to Dav Mincha. He came back from Mincha half hour later, and he sat down with a calculator and figured out, for 10,000 uniforms, how much money would I have made, profit on that deal? It was like 30,000 zehuvim. That was $30,000. So by the fact that he went to Dav Mincha, he missed out on a $30,000 profit to his business, and he was sameach v'nasan toida l'Hashem yisparach that is omid b'nisayon, and he didn't let the fact that he had a potential profit interfere with his mincha. He goes on to say, after a short period of time, the purchasing officer realized that the material by the competitor was inferior and could not be used for the soldiers. He came back to Rabbeinu Polito, he bought it from him, and he ended up with double profit that he would have had originally. I don't know why, but that's what it says at the end of the story. There are very similar stories. It doesn't have to be a Rabbeinu Polito from Turkey. That's, you know, his Messiah. We are faced with nisyonos like this. We have the opportunity to do a mitzvah, the opportunity to make money, and there's a conflict. The Mishnah is saying, try to calculate what you lose by doing the mitzvah against the schar. Sometimes you say, well, it costs money to buy an esrog. It costs money to do certain mitzvahs. Okay? Think of the schar. In this case, it's how much he would have profited had he gone to done the deal instead of going to Dav Mincha. And by the way, this actually is brought in the Mishnah Berurah in Hilchos Tefillah, that if a person is going to daven, he doesn't have to incur a loss to daven with a minion, but he can't forego the minion for profit. I mean, say if his building was on fire and he had to take care of it, you take care of it, right? Or if there's a flood and you have to seal up and whatever it is, to lose your business, you don't have to lose your parnosa, but to forego a profit, you do have to. He should bring his own maisa like that, the foregoing a profit. We don't appreciate what these things are. We really don't have a saga. You know, there's a story that I think I've told you in the past, how far this goes. The story with the Vilna Gaon's Rebbetzin. Vilna Gaon's wife and another lady used to collect tzedakah. I don't know if it was for Hachlachas Kala, whatever it was, they used to collect tzedakah. These two women, and one time they had to raise money, and they knocked on this rich lady's door, and she wasn't home. So they're going down the street, and they see her across the street. So the Vilna Gaon's wife says to her friend, "Oh, look, she's over there." And the friend and her go across the street, and they approach her, and they collect money. So they made a deal with each other that whoever dies first will come back and tell the other what's going on in Shemayim. And the friend died first, and came back. And the Vilna Gaon's wife says, "So what's going on in Shemayim?" She says, "You don't understand the degree to which we get schar for the things we do, and I guess if I cared for the averus, you're going to get schar for pointing your finger that she was across the street. It's not just walking. We think the big, you go to the house, you knock on the door, and you ask, and it's embarrassing. Even just pointing, oh, she's over there. You get schar for that. Part of the mitzvah. Nothing is overlooked in the Ribbono Shel Olam's cheshbon. So It's a little scary with Averis, but on the flip side of it, we really have no appreciation of how great our deeds are considered in Shemayim when we're doing mitzvahs. Every part of it, every stage of it, every action that is part of doing a mitzvah, you know, way beyond the Fumsara Agra. So if we really had a clear vision of what it was and what it's worth, it's like, of course. And when you read stories about tzaddikim and great tzaddikim and chassidim, because they understood that, you know, they lived with this, they totally were enveloped in this understanding of the value of learning and davening and helping people, doing chesed. And you know, you go through Baruch Levin, I mean, obviously he understood the value in everything he was doing. So for him, of course, like, what's the shiloh? And essentially, that's really the goal. We don't understand the Ma'at Schar Shal Mitzvah. And as long as you think there's a hefset, think of the schar. And you think by Averis you get schar, you don't even realize the hefset. It gives a motion to that too. Chavad Yosef talks about a case of a person who, using the legal system, the court system, gets money from somebody, and when halacha, a Beis Din would not have allowed him to take that money. There are times when Beis Din does not feel something is considered damage and you can't get reimbursed, but the courts will consider it damage and will get reimbursed. To take money through the courts that the Torah doesn't allow is gezel. It's stealing, he says, and the person is going to end up losing that money. He'll get sichas v'sholom, he'll have to pay doctors and nurses and suffering and yisurin, all because he took money that wasn't supposed to come to him. This is, you think you're going to profit. You think that there's schar avera. You don't realize the hefset you're going to run into when you take halachically illegally gained money.
What happens if it's not in the court system but through the companies?
What do you mean?
Like, I don't know, like, if your airlines reimburse you, if you're running a little late, like, I don't know how to reimburse you.
If the airlines have a policy that this is what they do, then that's what you signed up for and agreed for to begin with. So that's not against halacha. It's more when there's all kinds of suits that people make that halacha may not allow the suit, the lawsuit, to be valid, and yet.
The guy or against
you? To Yidden. One year is
not
yet. No, I'm not saying it's okay, but it might not be gezel. Gezel akka is not what to either, but for the goy, to deal with the goyish court system, that's kind of understood. You're not going to necessarily schlep a goy into Beis Din. But among Yidden, if the halacha does not allow for this, and they're going to get it through the legal system, that's not pashut. I think, you know, in some cases, in divorces, the courts will make a woman pay child support to her husband. If he has the kids sometimes and she's in a good job, he doesn't have a job, so she has to pay child support. How long is there such a thing as a lady paying child support? You know what I'm saying? There are things like that. There are cases where the legal system works differently than halacha, obviously. And if a person pursues the legal system for profit, then, and it's not halacha, that's schar aver k'neged hefsed. That's how Chavad Yosef looks at it. Of course, you could do simple without money, just in general. We think we're going to enjoy and geshmak with the aver, and you don't realize what problems you're going to loom down the road because of this aver.
Let's say it's unintentionally.
A person's unaware of the halacha. I don't know this thing called gezel v'shogeg. In other words, that's what you want to know? Can I steal from somebody by accident?
But for example, let's say you're charging them one thing. Let's say it says this price, one price of something, of an item. And then, though you have it in your system, and you're as a different price, but you're, it's not matched up right.
Oh, there's a sticker on the merchant in a store, but the computer brings up a different price? That's a problem. Store owners have to be very careful. Store owners have to be very careful not to overcharge their customers.
The policy of the store. You have to be careful of the receipt.
If you're a Yiddish store, I think it's very scary to be a store owner.
Why?
I remember years ago, I went to a kosher butcher, and the piece of chicken I bought rang up as if I was buying steaks. What? The price was so way out of whack. So we showed up back there, oh, it was a mistake, like laughing. It's not funny. If someone else didn't catch it, if he sold a whole stack of chickens priced for steaks and no one else caught it, that's terrible.
It's not a policy in the store?
Well, policy, he made a mistake.
He pinned
up the wrong sticker. In other words, steaks are this much per pound and chickens this much per pound.
As someone's buying in the store, you have to be careful.
And
you have to
double check.
If I see a tray of chicken wings, I have to be nervous that it's he rang it up as steak, as ground beef, whatever it is. He has to be, of course. The owner's problem. Very scary. As I've seen it reverse also, sometimes they go the other way. You know, they market it as something, a different product that's much cheaper than it should be. They bring it to his attention, you know, there's a mistake. You have to look.
So then that is gasoline.
Yeah, sure, it's terrible.
What?
It's very scary.
No,
let's say he's charging you more. The store owner, without realizing he's charging more.
Vice versa.
Also, you pay less than you're supposed to pay.
That's gasoline?
You owe money. You owe money. You bought a steak and it says on the chicken wings.
He only charged
$1.79 a pound.
I did not realize. That's his fault. I would have paid if he told me to pay it.
If you notice, you got to say something. Let's put it that way.
Okay,
we'll stop here. Let's continue next week.